Okay.
This call is being recorded.
Hi, this is John Richardson. Today is Thursday, May the 14th, 2020, and I'm speaking to you from Toronto, Canada. This is one more of our ongoing series of podcasts dealing with issues pertaining to Americans abroad. And this has been a very exciting last week. A number of things have happened, but notably, the U.S. Treasury has released the list of people who some would call the Liberty List, some would call the Name and Shame List. That is the list of people who have relinquished their U.S. citizenship, and it appears that the number of people on that list is the highest in the history of the list even existing. So I don't know that that means that more people have renounced or relinquished, but it certainly means that interest in not being a U.S. citizen continues right on. And I'm joined here today for our discussion. Again, all around the world, we have Karen Albert from Brisbane, Australia, Laura Snyder from Paris, France, Suzanne Herman from Vancouver, BC, which again is a long way from me in Toronto, and representing the United States of America in the United States of America today, Keith Redmond. How are you all today?
Great, thank you.
Great, John. It's great.
Good, thank you.
Okay, Keith, maybe we can start with you. So as I understand it, number one, as a matter of law, I guess it's in the Internal Revenue Code, Section 6039G, U.S. Treasury is actually required to list the names of people who have relinquished U.S. citizenship. And what do you infer from the large number of people on this list? What's your thinking on this?
Well, what I infer from the list is that it appears that the list is not accurate, that the numbers are underreported or not reported at all.
All right. Karen, would you agree with that sentiment?
Certainly. I mean, the last few quarters have been down well under 200 per quarter, and now all of a sudden we've got 2,907. I mean, it's just not quite believable that demand is shifting that quickly. And in fact, most of the names on the current list are not people who have renounced in the last quarter, as some people think. Most people, well, all of the people whose names I recognize are people who renounced between 12 and 18 months ago. So the paperwork sits on somebody's desk for a while, and then when it finally makes its way to the Treasury, it gets on the list. And I think probably the most benign reason you can ascribe to there being such a huge number this quarter is that the consulates in mid-March or so all closed down because of the coronavirus, and they wanted to clear their desks off. And so here are all the CLNs that have been piling up for a while.
Okay. You know, let me just pause here, and I would like to read into the podcast. It's not that long, but I'd like to read into the podcast the actual part of Internal Revenue Code 6039G, which governs this. Now, what it says is, notwithstanding any other provision of law, not later than 30 days after the close of each calendar quarter, the Secretary shall publish in the Federal Register the name of each individual losing United States citizenship within the meaning of Section 877A or 877A, the other, anyway, okay, with respect to whom the Secretary receives information under the preceding sentence. So let me just pare that down. What it seems to be saying is 30 days after the end of each quarter, Treasury is required to publish in the Federal Register the list of people who they have been notified by the Secretary of State who have relinquished U.S. citizenship. So that's what it seems to say. Now, what you're saying, Karen, is that in fact, the names on that list include people beyond more than the previous quarter. Is that correct?
Well, certainly. I know several people on the list who relinquished in late 2018 and early 2019.
Okay. So really that would mean that either the secretary, Treasury Secretary, wasn't doing their job of reporting, or they simply hadn't received the information from the various counselors from the State Department in order to report that information. Would that be correct?
Yeah, that's one interpretation, certainly.
Okay.
And if I would like to add to the mix that there are, and I know individuals who have renounced and whose names have never been on the list. So has their paperwork been misplaced?
Yeah, and that is certainly significant. Laura, bringing you into the conversation here, is there any way to interpret all of this other than that the people relinquishing U.S. citizenship exceed the ones who were identified on this list?
Well, it's clear that the number of people who are relinquishing exceed the number of people on this list. There's no other conclusion that can be drawn.
Okay, so what we know is that the numbers are clearly being underreported.
You should also know, John, that there's a huge demand for appointments to relinquish U.S. citizenship. You know, the waiting lists in some consulates can reach up to a year, and the fee increase in 2010, whenever they increased it last, or 2014 is when they increased it last, that has not slowed the demand at all.
Yeah. Now, Suzanne, you're in Canada. What do you know, if anything, about the waiting list to get appointments to renounce citizenship in Canada?
Well, my understanding is, this is Laura, my understanding is that it's actually quite lengthy, the waiting list to be able to get an appointment and go in. And what I've also seen in several countries is that they have reduced the number of consulates that offer the appointment. So people have to travel further for a smaller number of available appointments.
You know, on that note, Laura, you were absolutely correct. In fact, very recently in Canada, Halifax and Quebec City were centers that used to allow renunciations, and they no longer allow renunciations. So, you know, that's interesting. And this, of course, really adds to the cost. I mean, think of all the dual citizens in Eastern Canada who want to renounce, and now they basically, their closest center would be Montreal, right? So this, you know, this really is added to the cost of what is already a very high fee to renounce U.S. citizenship at $2,350. Keith, what are your thoughts on the fee to renounce or relinquish U.S. citizenship, especially as compared to other countries?
Well, if I may give my personal opinion, I call it an extortion fee. With other countries, they don't charge a fee. It's zero. But with the U.S., they up their fee, stating that they're doing it to take care of the cost, the back-end cost of doing the renunciation process.
Does anybody...
With that in mind, the closing of consulates and the raising of the fees, how can one not draw the conclusion that they really want to stymie people from renouncing? They certainly aren't recognizing the fact that plenty of people want to renounce.
Well, and then on top of that, in the current crisis, they're all closed. All of the consulates are closed.
Right.
Which means that if you're a citizen and want to get out of the U.S. tax system, you can't. But if you're a green card holder and want to get out of the U.S. tax system, all you have to do is send in a form.
That's right. Yeah, green card holders have a huge advantage. So really, we've got a perfect storm here. We have a reduction in centers where people can renounce. We have a waiting list for appointments. We have a fee that's increased significantly. Do any of you think that there's room for the fee to go up to even higher than $2,350?
Oh, I think that there's unlimited room for the fee to go up.
Yeah, it's already out of reach of many middle class and working class families in countries with either poor exchange rates or low incomes.
Well, for example, Mexico. You know, think of the number of dual citizens in Mexico. And I mean, I've seen all kinds of comments coming out of Mexico, complaining about this.
I see regularly people starting GoFundMe or whatever to fund their renunciation of U.S. citizenship.
Or, you know.
Yeah, I know a couple people in France who have taken out a consumer loan in order to fund their renunciation fee.
Well, that certainly means that they think that it has a great deal of value. That means they certainly think it's worth more than $2,350 plus interest to not be a U.S. citizen, right?
Well, that's true. They're taking a look at the future value of that money. So they are looking at it because they're able to do it. They're looking at it as an investment in their future.
Yeah. And now they can use their CARES. They can use their CARES check now.
Getting back to the topic here today, that on the list, the list includes people who've lost their citizenship, but it does not include all these green card holders. And I think there's a lot of confusion about exactly who is on the list and how they get on the list.
Actually, you know, Karen, you make a great point. And I think the confusion is far more than who's on the list. I think there's general confusion about the reporting requirements when people relinquish U.S. citizenship. And I think it might be worth going over that. I actually wrote something on this in December, but when I wrote it, I realized that the reality is that there is no event in the life of an American citizen that necessitates, that generates more reporting than the renunciation of U.S. citizenship. There's more reporting when you renounce than when you're born, when you die, when you marry, when you divorce, when you're bankrupt, when you're convicted of a crime. All of these things pale to the significance of the renunciation of U.S. citizenship, which basically generates an absolute reporting frenzy. And let's break this down a little bit. First of all, picking up where Karen was a minute ago. So Treasury Secretary has obligations to send information to the Federal Register, and that's the Liberty List or the Name and Shame List, depending on your point of view. But that applies only to people who've lost U.S. citizenship. In other words, not green card holders. So it is not, so to say that green card holders should be on that list is incorrect. Now,
And it also is everybody who's lost U.S. citizenship, not just covered expatriates, which is another common misconception about the list.
Absolutely. Every individual losing U.S. citizenship is whether you're covered or uncovered. Okay.
So it's not just a list of rich people, which is what you'll see a lot in the popular press. Look at all the rich people who ditch their U.S. citizenship to avoid taxes.
I think a lot of people presume that everybody's rich. They're presuming that, you know, people are fleeing America and renouncing their citizenship. So what they don't realize is that it can take years to renounce your citizen due to the fact that, you know, State Department requires you to have a second citizenship or another citizenship in order to not be considered stateless when you renounce. So these things can take years for people. A lot of these people on these lists have probably left America like decades ago. And John, you say that renouncing creates a reporting frenzy. just leaving America creates a reporting frenzy when it comes to all the forms that you have to file when you're filing taxes and whatnot.
Absolutely. For Americans generally, and particularly for those who leave the country, the mantra is report early, report often, report everything, and by God, keep a record of what you report. Okay, now, so we've talked a little bit about the reporting obligations on the Treasury Secretary. Let's move on now to what are the reporting obligations for the State Department and the immigration people. Does anybody want to comment on that, or do you want me to comment on it? Or
Can I ask a question about that? Through the actual chain of places, you know, this renunciation goes to after the consulate, what does that consist of? I mean, obviously there's a backlog in the renunciations, and that there was a log jam, and the log jam's been released. It was getting held up somewhere. Could have been the consular level, could have been at the State Department itself, or with the Treasury Department. I mean, it could have been held up at any of these.
All of the above.
Places, couldn't they?
All of the above.
Yes. So what are the particular places that this goes to? I mean, it has to go to the Federal Register, too. It could get held up there.
Yeah, that's true. But now that would come from the Treasury Secretary. Okay, so all of this is in Internal Revenue Code 6039G, if you have the time to go through it. But, this, you know, we've talked about Treasury is responsible for the name and shame list, but where does Treasury get its information? It gets it from the State Department. Okay, who is required as a matter of law to forward to Treasury anybody with respect to whom a CLN is issued. In addition, the Immigration Department is required to forward to Treasury all the green card holders who abandon their status. Okay, so that's the second level of reporting. And then we have the level of individual reporting when people renounce U.S. citizenship. So on that, Karen, would you care to comment on that? What must an individual report who loses U.S. citizenship?
The IRS requires that an individual who's lost U.S. citizenship files with their final U.S. tax return a form 8854, on which they certify 5 years worth of compliance, that their assets are less than $2 million U.S., and that their tax liability is less than some huge number, over $100,000 per year average. So for Americans abroad, the last one is basically hardly ever a problem. So basically you file that 8854 that's got all of your financial data on it. And so the IRS can determine whether you're a covered expatriate or not.
Okay.
But you can get a CLN without being tax compliant for 5 years.
Oh, absolutely. We're just talking about what the statute requires of people. You know, the law is so complicated that unless people are well advised, which, you know, I think is another impediment to this. I mean, how can people afford the professional fees, right? But if they're, you know, if they're not advised, they may not know anything about that reporting requirement at all. I mean, they may assume that they can just, you know, go renounce U.S. citizenship, and that's basically it.
Well, and if they have no assets in the U.S., the IRS has no leverage over them anyways.
Didn't this get the attention of the IRS when the IRS said that they were going to send out soft letters to people who renounced but didn't file taxes? That was
right.
Actually, I don't know of anybody who's actually received anything from the IRS in other countries.
Right. So the IRS, as far as I am aware, and this is just my impression, okay, is that they've done two things in the last couple of years. One was they announced sort of a compliance initiative on people who had perhaps renounced U.S. citizenship without meeting their tax requirements. I'm not sure where that went, if anywhere. And I think you're right. I think they were talking about sending out some soft letters. Maybe they have. But I think more interestingly and more significantly, in September of 2019, what they did was they introduced the relief procedures for foreign, for former U.S. citizens, which appeared to create the opportunity for those who had not complied with their tax and reporting requirements to actually do that and, you know, not be covered expatriates. So I think that's very interesting because when they released those new procedures, which, by the way, can be used prospectively, they acknowledged, you know, flat out that all kinds of people had been renouncing who had not met their tax obligations to varying degrees. So, yeah.
And, I mean, and didn't that include a $20,000 tax break for people?
$25,000, actually. That's right. Amazing. So, yeah. So the IRS under that program, and, you know, maybe we should do another podcast on that, how it works, actually is forgiving up to $25,000 of tax owing, which really makes
it. Which they have no statutory authority to do.
You're absolutely right, Karen. It has no statutory authority. But hey, you know, the IRS is, both judge, jury, and all of judge, jury, and executioner. So if it's okay with the IRS, it's probably okay. But that is very, very interesting. Okay. So I just want to recap though, very quickly on how I understand the reporting requirements in Internal Revenue Code 6039G, because this is so confusing, okay? All right, so there are three categories of reporting requirements. Individuals, I'm going to leave green card holders out of this, okay? Individuals, the State Department, and U.S. Treasury. Now, one, starting with U.S. Treasury. U.S. Treasury is required on the name and shame list to release the names of every individual who has received or who has relinquished U.S. citizenship as per the State Department for the three-month period. Okay, so that's what they're required to do. Notice the requirement says that they have received. Okay, so it may well be that they're not receiving all of the information. The obligation on the State Department is to forward to Treasury anybody with respect to who a certificate of loss of nationality has been issued. Okay, so notice that slightly different language from the obligation on Treasury to publish the list. And finally, individuals appear to be required to file the Form 8854. Mostly not because of what the statute says, but because the Form 8854 is where people certify that they met their compliance requirements for the previous 5 years. And that is the reason why both covered and uncovered expatriates would file the 8854. So that is a summary of that incredibly confusing area. I think that we all agree on this call that whatever else may be going on here, there's absolutely no doubt that the numbers reported by Treasury are not accurate representations of those who are relinquishing U.S. citizenship. Would anybody like to add anything to that, or does that pretty much wrap up our thoughts on this for today?
John, I have a comment. I have a comment, which is a wise man said to me a little while ago that if you think about what's happening here with renunciation and how difficult and expensive it is to renounce U.S. citizenship, the U.S. seems to be the largest open-air prison in the world.
Laura, who is prison? What strong language?
A fiscal prison, at least, yes.
Fiscal prison, okay.
Okay, there
you
go.
You know what? I think we can all agree that it's not easy to sever your relationship with the United States. Agreed?
Agreed.
Agreed.
All right. Anybody else have any thoughts, Keith?
No, I think everybody pretty much summed it up, and I think Laura really summed it up with her statement.
Yes.
Well, there may well be some truth to that. There may well be some truth. Suffice it to say, severing ties with the United States is not an easy thing to do, and it can be extremely expensive. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate because, you know, this is a world where globalization is, you know, regarded as a reality. U.S. citizenship was regarded as an asset. And now it seems to me that it's fairly clear that unless you're going to live in the United States, that a CLN, a certificate of loss of nationality, is worth far, far more than a U.S. passport. And on that note, thank you all for participating today, and we will pick this up with our next topic. Thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.